evening, everyone. It's Brenda from the Healthy Wealthy Evolution here, and it's a fantastic day to be alive. And today we have the special guest of David Bentley, who is a world-renowned hypnotherapist, and we're going to have an amazing time here with David. We're going to be having Q&As, and we're going to be sharing truth and a lot of information about hypnotherapy and how it works, and why it would work for you. So today's show is all about helping us fulfill part of the mission of the Healthy Wealthy Evolution, and that is evolving in our fullest life experience of health, wealth, happiness, and joy. So we are so happy to have David Bentley with us. David Bentley has been a follower, a member of the Evolution family, and we're very proud to have him with us, as well as his musical genius. He's the gentleman who wrote the jingle for the intro of the beautiful music that you hear on the replays with his beautiful daughter, Emma, singing. So, David, thank you very much for all that wonderful work that you've done, and we're so happy to have you here. Welcome to the show.
It's an honor and a privilege, Brenda. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we are blessed to have you as part of the family. David, on this show, we're going to talk about some of the amazing points about hypnotherapy and why it is such a practical tool and what its benefits are. I know many of us hear about hypnotherapists, but we would really like to hear from an expert what hypnotherapy is, its known uses and successes of hypnotherapy, what type of people come to see David and any expert in hypnotherapy and mysticism, hypnotherapy and mesmerism, sound and light technology, and hypnotherapy and the pursuit and purpose of advantage, and hypnotherapy in children. We are going to cover many, many bases tonight on this show, and we're so happy to have your expertise. And, David, I just want to read a little bit of a bio about you, because many people may have never heard of you before, or if they have, you need to be a household name in many homes. So David was born in a Chesterfield coal mining town at the very center of industrial England. The town was a Roman settlement. Being in a coal field, and the ancient market town became the center for coal mining and heavy industry. David was the fourth of five children, and in his early years, he spent being brought up in a small terraced house where he shared with his 10-foot by 12-foot bedroom with two brothers in a very poor family condition. So I know that war times were very difficult in England, especially after all the devastation that occurred. He remembers very well his mother every day saying to him, "You will have nothing," and that you should expect nothing and should not be disappointed. Along with other punishments, he was locked up in an underground coal cellar, and he remembers the screaming only so well. David was accepted by an employer at the age of 14 and finished school at that age, and then he immigrated to Canada and lived there in Canada for 7 years. In the continuing search for better methods, David discovered the work of Maxwell Cade, the pathfinder of electroencephalography, and he still is has the mahogany box mind mirror from that period, and it still works. David gave classes in Seattle for Charles Tebbets and the Hypnotism Training Institute in the early 80s. He was the first person in the UK to give classes in adult education for a county council education authority using the term hypnotism. These classes ran successfully for 7 years. Over the past 30 years, David has studied the use of light and sound technology to achieve altered states of consciousness. Now at the ripe young age of 68 years, David is the father of a 16-year-old daughter, Emma, who is in her final year of a biochemistry degree, achieving exam results continuously over 80%, 85%, and actually many 100%. David says that the evidence of what he has put into practice over the past 20 years shows in his daughter's achievements. He says anyone having a genius child is possible if they know what to do and how to do it. David has a new book out and soon to be released this month. It's called The Pursuit of Advantage. So we are so excited to have David with us, and congratulations on all your successes and for the journey of life as it has brought you here tonight.
Well, Brenda, as you were saying that, my mind flashed back to the very coal cellar that I was locked in as punishment. And of course, really, you know, this is a two-edged sword, because on the one hand, it was a horrific upbringing. And on the other, had I not have suffered that, I wouldn't have learnt what I've learnt and gone into what I do to overcome the panic attacks that I had. at such an early age, when there was nowhere to turn. The term hypnotism was known about. I'd read about hypnotism and hypnotherapy, as it were, in the school library. And in actual fact, the first hypnotherapist I ever saw, because I couldn't stop my heart pounding for no particular reason, was an ex-bus driver at Saltergate in Chesterfield, a man named Harry Hunt. And he did his best, and that was the start of my journey to where I am today. So really, you did say in the bio that my mother said to me, "You will have nothing." And I can remember saying this over and over again. And this, you know, this turns into what we today call a paradigm. It's the situation that you're brought up in and live in affects so heavily how you are in your life. And so I'm, whilst I have done all the things I've done it because I found out about this altered state of consciousness that we could get out of our everyday state into another world where we could make better contact with a body and we could make better contact with its infinite intelligence of the universe, if you want to call it that. And you could change your life for the better and get the advantage. You only have to be slightly better than the rest, Brenda, to have the advantage to do well in whatever you want to do. And so I would start off by saying that when I first went to see somebody who used hypnotism, yes, it really was true. He would hold an object, maybe a watch, and swing it and let your eyes become heavy and relaxed. And of course, as years have gone by, I recognize that when people come to see you because they are what we'll call overweight, the last thing they want to be do is to be told to let their body become heavy and relaxed. It's already too heavy. So the matter of semantics, of words, of what is now called neural linguistic programming is very vital in how you treat yourself, or if you can get to a good therapist, how you are allowed to be treated. Because it's what words mean to you is going to be the difference between if you can enter a state of meditation or if you can't. It's how you transfer the written word, the seen word, and the listened word in your own self as to what your reaction or effect is going to be to that word. And I would say right now off the bat, if this is a little bit too heavy, is that the person in you who reads and sees is not the same person who listens. We have a known five senses, and three of those senses brought together at any one time will result in a paradigm or a conditioned response. So let me give you an instance in my life. A face snarling at me, a shouting at me, and a smack results in a conditioned response. You've used three of your sensory perceptions at the same time. And if you happen to do something wrong at the table and use your fingers instead of a knife and fork, as the British are so concerned how you use a knife and fork, and somebody snarls at you and slaps you, you've then got a paradigm inside you, a conditioned response that says, oh, I'm sitting down for dinner. Very shortly, there's going to be a nasty face, a shout, and a smack. And these are the conditioned responses that lead to the panic attacks that I suffered, which I no longer do, of course, but led me into this world where the only answer was what was loosely termed hypnotism. And you should start off from the state of how the word hypnosis came about. When the early users of it that could write in the English language, James Braid, wrote about hypnotism, it was because it was a state that looked like you were asleep, but you could actually speak at the same time. So you were awake and asleep at the same time, basically. Now, that made me think on then that if that is the case, then you're alive all the time. Now, just because you're asleep does not mean to say that you can't feel or smell or taste or touch. You're not seeing because your eyes are closed. But for anybody who's woken up to an alarm clock, and I'm sure that your listeners have, just because you were fast asleep your hearing didn't stop working. Mm-hmm. And not only did it not stop working, it could tell the difference between something that was dangerous and something that was nice. So in other words, if the telephone rang and you're deeply asleep, you'd have a thought like, oh dear, what's that? Or if the doorbell rang, you'd need to answer it. But if you heard a car backfire outside, or if somebody fired a shotgun outside your door, you'd wake up in fear. So the fact that you can be fast asleep does not stop your hearing working. Well, neither does it stop your voice working either. But the difference is that when you are your sleeping person, what psychiatrists call the sleep state and the wake state, so we are one person, allegedly, but we have a waking state and a sleeping state, we can be spoken to in our sleeping state, and we can answer in our sleeping state. So people then now talk of Freud himself, who was possibly the first person to have the credibility to write about his uses of hypnotism, though he himself said in his own lifetime that he stopped using hypnotism in psychoanalysis because there was no need for it. And that is what I have found myself in my own practice. I no longer use hypnotic techniques with fingers raised saying, sit and relax and let your body relax and let all this relaxation go. I don't use that anymore. There's no need. And so when the human being of any language, by the way, when any human being is sat there in front of you or laying listening to what you're saying, the very fact that they are asleep doesn't stop them talking and listening and understanding. And it took me quite a few years of practice before I came to the conclusion that we were actually two people, that this other person was living in a completely different dimension. And when I eventually got enough people, after 500 people start saying the same story and start telling you the same things, it pretty well comes to the conclusion that, wait a minute, this isn't even the same voice as the voice that talks to you when you are in your waking state. And so a hypnotic state is one where you could say that you are purposefully asleep, but purposefully thinking at the same time. And you need an operator there to do it. You can meditate yourself. You can calm yourself down. If anybody knowing the Christian Bible will know, it says, two or three are gathered together in my name, I am in the midst of you. And I realized pretty early on that the effect of having an operator or the person using the hypnotic techniques was not only using the hypnotic technique, it was vitally important that they were there because there was a reaction between the two people. Now, there was a famous man in the United Kingdom named Harry Edwards, and he was a healer, and of course, had a lot of time for what we call spiritual healing. Because when a person is stood near you and they have these low brain frequencies, these calming frequencies, and they come and stand around you, Harry Edwards would put on a white coat and have hundreds of people standing outside waiting for him. He would sit them in the chair and then he would put his hands around them, around their chest, around the solar plexus, the sun of the body, and around their head. And as years went on, when the Pathfinder, Maxwell Cade, with electroencephalography, who is a scientist, not a doctor, and he came on to measure brain frequencies. They took healers and they took the person sat in the chair, measured both their brain frequencies, and after around 7 minutes, the brain frequencies being put out by the patient would be that of the healer. He would actually overcome them. So I realized again then in the practice that when you were there dealing with someone else, it was far better for someone to be there telling you to relax and to feel better about yourself than trying to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. And so if you've got that wonderful partnership in your life that you can sit in your own home and sit and relax and your partner can talk to you, you will have a very profound effect. Now, science has overcome this. Science has traced what has happened when two people are working together. Now, this was the work of Maxwell Cade in London in the 70s and 1970s, he met a man named Jeff Blundell, who was a technical engineer, electrical engineer, and between them, they had some problems to solve. And one of them was that pilots, when flying their aircraft, if the sun happened to be in a certain place in the sky and the propellers were traveling at an actual speed, the flicker of the light would send the pilots into a trance state. Now, I use that term, trance state. Trance state is when you can actually no longer be in conscious control of yourself. But an operator, a third person, can have you do things. For people who've seen a stage hypnotist, they'll know exactly what I mean. That a person can lose their sensory perceptions and take direct commands from an operator. Now, these states are measured. So we've gone a long way now. I've tried to get from the point where the loose term hypnotism, taken from the Greek word hypnos, meaning sleep, to where you're sensing of being awake and asleep at the same time. It needed to be measured scientifically so that we knew what was actually happening. Now, I had the opportunity to, using self-hypnosis, well, by the 60s, and in the middle 60s, I was already ahead of the game as far as the community were concerned. I knew how to be in trauma, yet calm myself. Because using self-hypnosis and meditating, it might all be very well sat in a group of people in the quiet or quiet of your home and sat there saying, I'm now peaceful, calm, tranquil and quiet. That's no use to you when you're in the middle of a traumatic situation. That's when you need to be calm, when all around you are in trauma. You need to keep your head. That's when the two parts of you have to come together and say, well, all around me can be panicking. Everything else can be going silly. I'll keep my head. I'll stay steady. And so scientists in the 70s now have the technology coming on. A very great friend of mine, Dennis Efer, was the actual patent holder of the crystal growth that grew the LED. And so the light-emitting diode now played such a terrific part of the work of Maxwell Cade and Jeff Blundell, and of course his wife Isabel Cade and others. And they were now going to measure what was going off with the human brain when they were entering a trance state. And of course the way to get to the trance state they already knew from their investigations in the Second World War when pilots were going into trance was that a flickering light like the old monks used with a candle could actually take you into this altered state of consciousness or altered state of awareness. And so a stroboscope was used, and it was set off at the various frequencies, and then some invention had to be made to monitor the brain frequencies and the amplitude, the power of the output that the brain issues.
Right.
Of course, the heart, the electrical impulse from the heart, the EEG, the ECG, can be measured 10 feet away, but the brain needs to be measured much closer. And so Maxwell Cade and Jeff Blundell set out. Now, Jeff Blundell made microphones, and he made microphones for world movies. And he invented the microphone that could be put at the side of the head that could measure the speed of which the brain operates and the power that it operates. And, of course, it was quickly found out, and it was already known, of course, that you have a left brain and a right brain. And the left brain could be issuing one frequency, and the right brain could be issuing another. And here is, and I'll tell you right off the bat, the cause of all trauma. Because as we grow as babies, when we're born, we have slow frequencies. And as we grow older, our brain frequencies increase in speed and in power, and our heart pulse rate increases also. And I have found that when you are growing and you take on board 2 and 2 equals 4, and you learn language, and you learn how not to do things and how to do things, and you take on board these conditioned responses, you will need in therapy to go back to those frequencies to remember the incidents that caused the trauma in the first place. So the brain was measured with its speed and its power. And of course, they've set about thinking, well, now, who are we going to get to be victims, to, patients to be able to measure? And so they set about, they found out that they could get a needle and they could not only measure the brain frequency, but also measure the electrical conductivity across the skin. Now, this is usually called galvanic skin resistance. And as you start to sweat across your skin, of course, if you become fearful, you start to sweat and your mouth goes dry and you get butterflies in your stomach and your knees start to wobble. And you get sweat on the surface of your skin. If you pass a small electrical current across your skin, the resistance can be measured. And so they started out measuring people and went looking for gurus to say, well, who are the most meditative, relaxed people that we can find? And of course, in a very short time, actually, measuring with the new LEDs and measuring with Blundell's microphones, it was found what sort of state people were when they were asleep, when they were awake, when they were agitated. The medical world stepping in didn't just say, oh, well, if half a brain frequency is A, and then if 10 cycles is B, and 15 cycles is C, and so it goes up, they have to turn things inside out and put Greek to it. So things get turned upside down. So it was decided that the slow coma state frequencies would be called delta. And then we have alpha, theta, and beta frequencies. You'll have heard of beta blocker drugs. Well, these, of course, are the high brain frequencies that are a traumatized brain. It's when the two parts of the mind have seen danger and the beta frequencies kick in. They send messages to the heart and then it causes what we call the fight-flight response.
Right.
Now, this needed to be measured before we could do any good. Although this amazes me, when I think back 45, nearly 50 years, and I was helping people then very much, it amazes me now. I think, well, we did get cures. You know, we did get fantastic ameliorations of the symptoms without the electronics that we have today. So to move on, by measuring the brain frequencies, we found that people were awake and agitated, and this is why stroboscopes are no longer allowed in theatres and in dance halls and in public places, because if you put a strobe light out, the type that Kay was using, you used to see them in dance halls, and these were running at 30, 40 cycles per second, people would get agitated, start fighting, get angry. And if they were put out at slow speeds, people would go to sleep. And so obviously from that, if we could have something that would issue slow light frequencies into us, we would go to sleep. And we do. And so in a sweeping statement for the whole world, there isn't any need for sleeping pills. You just need slow wave sound and slow wave light into your eyes and into your eyes, into your eyes and into your ears. And in a matter of a few minutes, you will be sound asleep.
Mm.
Now, where does sleep come into hypnotism? Well, really, it doesn't. The kind of deep, sound sleep that you are getting rest and feeling well isn't the same frequency, the same batch of frequencies where one can go into esoteric worlds, into other intelligences, and you can. And so we'll get back to Maxwell Cade and his machine, the electroencephalograph, and I still have my Mind Mirror 2 here that was manufactured about 1980. And it still works. And these were fastened to people's heads to find out what was happening. And they went to the best gurus and found that the mystics, you went to India, and found that the mystics who thought they could meditate actually weren't meditating at anything like the depth that others could.
Mm-hmm.
And so this electronic gauging of the brain frequencies became the yardstick of how deep you were relaxed and what you could feel. In fact, there was a state measured where people actually had out-of-body experiences. Now, this is a use of altered states of consciousness to have this out-of-body experience for your consciousness to drift away. And nobody can work in hypnotherapy, as I have, for over 50 years and not come across this phenomena. The thing is, today, rather than have the local vicar knocking on my door in 1972 and telling me I was practicing hypnotism and I was demonic, as to now, the internet has buried all that. You can go on the internet and find thousands of people making binaural sounds, putting them to music to aid people to get away from the realities of stress that they're suffering every day. And so the old terms of hypnotism and hypnosis are now getting split into finite parts because the reaction on the human is measurable. We can actually measure what is going off. So I remember a great hypnotist, if you will, named Peter Casson, who actually helped surgeons in the Second World War when no anaesthetics were available. He could get people into a trance state, and not only did they get good surgery, they recovered faster than people who were using chemical anaesthetics. And I can tell you that I have actually worked with surgeons who have said, David, you've not only improved my mind, but you've improved my body because I needed something done. And they use self-hypnotic techniques for dentistry and for surgery. And these techniques are such that we can now guide you with light and sound technology to a brain state where you can have pain-free dentistry. You can have pain-free surgery, and not only will you have it. I remember talking to Michael Preston, who was practicing, it was a doctor in Phoenix, Arizona, and I said to him, this is about 1984-85 time, I was with him in Seattle, and said to him, can you get hypnotherapy before cardiac surgery in Phoenix? And he said, you can't have cardiac surgery in Phoenix until you've seen somebody who can teach you to relax and meditate. And that was back then in 85. And so it isn't enough today for me to say to somebody, use self-hypnosis. You can actually, for a very small amount of money, purchase light and sound technology or just sound technology. Sit back, put on the glass. This is what I do now. It's a long time. I have techniques where I can quickly get people rapidly. I've taught police and secret services, if you will. I can say that openly now I'm retired, but I've taught rapid induction techniques for interrogation where the client doesn't know that they're being hypnotized, if you will. I remember, I think it was Dave Ellman, had a technique called shake hands, where he could shake hands with somebody and have them in an altered state in a few seconds. And now I've worked with authorities that wanted to be able to interrogate people in just such a way. But today, for the person listening to your show or in the world who wants to be able to discover why they are as they are, how they want to change what they are, then we have light and sound technology where you can use the term hypnosis, if you will. I would rather say an altered state of awareness. An altered state of life. And to take it a step further, I say on my website, and I say in my books, that we are two people. And we are, Brenda. We are two people. And so many people in their everyday life will say, do you know, I'm in two minds about this.
Right.
And Freud will say that there was a conscious and a subconscious. And he then split that up into id, ego, superego. Well, that's okay. When Freud said, you have a conscious, like I'm talking to you now, and probably talking in around 14 to 18 cycles per second, or hertz, as they're called, and hopefully with both sides of a brain at the same time, he talked about a subconscious. And people have taken that on board to mean that it's some sort of bucket that you can throw ideas into and they stick. And that's what you need to do to change your behavior. It isn't like that. I worked with Charles Tebbets in the 80s, and he'd done work with people before that, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, people in California, and they decided on parts therapy. Now, here I will go into something of a shock for your listeners and others, because in my findings, I found that not only are we two people, but the two people have seven parts to their character, and these are set in certain frequencies and can be discovered. Now, I've found that when I talk to the subconscious mind, and I use that terminology because it's worldwide, it is a mind. It is a mind like the conscious mind, only it's faster than you, it's cleverer than you, and it's basing all its ideas on conditioned responses and paradigms that it learned in its forming years. And when you separate this part from the conscious part and from other parts and say, why are you harming yourself? It'll be say, because I am unworthy. I don't deserve this. That was a terminology my mother used with me all the time. You are not fit, she used to say. You don't deserve this. You have to deserve something. So what did you do to deserve whatever it was you wanted? A good job, a better car, a nice home, a lovely wife, a lovely husband, lovely. What did you have to do to deserve these things? And of course, as a child, when you're in slow brain frequencies and you happen to have a bad parent or bad parents, and you can take it from me, not all mums are nice people. I've had some horror stories and was a result of one myself of mums. And of course, the same with dads. So I'm not sexist in that regime at all. But when the child is growing, it's taking on board everyday language. Bandler and Grindler called this neuro-linguistic programming. And so it said that if you every day listen to something, that is how you form your life. And Brenda, I have found that to be totally true. So if you're brought up in a household with four other kids, it's what we call a screaming household, where people are always arguing and fighting, and or there's always a bunch of something going on. Whereas another child can be brought up in a quiet household where there is no sound. That child, as an only child, can live on its own. It can find its own company okay. It doesn't have to go out at night. It doesn't have to make itself busy. Whereas right. The one of four or the one of five can't stop in at night. It has to go out. It has to be out. And then will say to me, you know, I haven't had a night in my home for 10 years. It's amazing what we learn as children without us being taught. It's what we learn from our conditions that we live in. And so when we are now measuring people, it's very simple. People can come along and say, I mean, and I've had clients worth hundreds of millions, and they've said to me, I've got $180 million in the bank, and I still feel poor, and I'm desperately unhappy. And I said, well, what was the purpose of you earning all this money? What do you mean? Well, what was the purpose? What were you going to do when you got it? Well, I don't know. My goal was to have as much money as I could. Well, goals are no good to you unless you've got a purpose. What's your purpose? And so when you go into being a child, you are learning from your parents every day. And as you get older, you can either carry on with those habits and sayings and things that your parents did. Let me give you one little insight. I was called one day to a house, a very, very substantial home, and I got there and introduced to the door, and the young man was about 20 years old, said to me, so what can I do for you? He said, I just had to give a talk in my first class in university, and I couldn't speak. So I said, oh, it was just a public speaking kind of thing, he couldn't speak. He said, no, I couldn't speak. I couldn't speak at all. So I said, well, let's get down and let's get a little bit of analysis. And I said, do your parents talk? You taught me. Oh, no, both my parents are deaf mutes. Now, how could you handle that? Both his parents were deaf mutes. He was an only child, and he'd been brought up in total silence. Even though he'd been to school, when he was in this situation, he couldn't speak. And so we are learning, training, building in conditioned responses from our early years without knowing it. And then as we get older and we start to realize, why is this, why is that, why is, we start asking this question, why, we need to find out. Hypnotherapy and the hypnotic state or the altered state of awareness is the key. It is the front door to the memories of your life and even your past lives, where you can find out why you are as you are and why you do what you do. And I know Brian Rowett, an Australian doctor, works in London still, came up and did some work for me 20-odd years ago in the United Kingdom, and he wrote a wonderful book called it was a wonderful tape that he made, How Do I Know What I Know, or How Do You Know What You Know? How do we know what we know? Well, we learnt it every day of our forming years without us knowing it. So the hypnotic state, which can now easily be achieved by scientific devices, will allow us, on our own, though preferably with an operator, to go back into our memories to find out why we say what we say. All day you will be repeating the things of the persons of authority in your forming years, brainwashed you with in your forming years. And so people will come along and got exam results. Oh, I've got an exam coming up. My daughter, who is 16 and just finishing a biochemistry degree, did a 3-hour university exam just a couple of weeks ago, the final of a course of a 3-hour exam. And some people came out within a few minutes. Some were sweating and crying before they went in because somebody had trained them that exams were hard. Exams were difficult. And I've always said to Emma, if something is hard, you knock it. It's hard. If something is difficult, it's because you haven't been trained how to do it. Once you've been trained how to do it, it's just natural. That's all they want you to do. So she came out of the exam laughing, happy, high five. And the invigilator said, I've never seen anybody come out of a 3-hour exam in the university happy and smiling. Well, she did. Because of what we do. So I would say to your listeners, and I would say to anybody, if you want to see your children grow to be happy, and believe me, the youngest client I have at the moment came to me at 6 weeks of age because that little mite had an awful birth and she couldn't sleep. Her parents came to me, what are we going to do because we can't get any sleep either. And these are professional people. We made them a sound wave that could be put on their iPod. They put the iPod into the station at the side of the cot. It played. Within 8 or 9 minutes, the baby was sound asleep. And the effect on her health 2 months later is profound. She's absolutely sound. And so we've got all these techniques. And the thing is, the technique is to get into your forming years to where you took on board these paradigms, these sayings, these lessons that are implanted now in your subconscious character. Use the word character. This is where the word chakra comes in. People have got this chakra idea now, where they paint little silly colours going up and down the spine and people sat cross-legged. Of course, the anglicization of chakra is character. And we do have these characters. But one character within you, the seven characters, like there are seven candles on candelabras, you've seen those all over the place. It is a character, and it doesn't, the throat chakra doesn't handle the throat. There are seven characters within every human being, and it handles everything. They do everything. You just have to expose it and find out why it works in that frequency and why it is doing what it is doing. And once you have got a whole brain situation going on, by issuing light and sound frequencies, this means actually flashing lights in your eyes and sounds in your ears that match, your brain after 7 minutes will follow that frequency called the neural response. Your brain will follow it. You can then take the brain up and down from 1 to 40 cycles per second. All these are called hertz. As you go through the frequencies, you will come across harmonics where the character can be exposed. Now, when the left brain, the left character is thinking one thing and the right character is thinking another, you have a conflict. And when you have this conflict, the fight starts, the neurotic starts, then the psychosis starts. And when the fight gets so bad between the two characters, one wants to do something and the other one doesn't, the fight starts out. It goes up a level of consequences till the self-harm is so bad that suicide is the answer. And this is what Freud called in his conflict. This is measurable. We can go in, we can monitor the brain frequencies left and right. Now, when we have this whole brain capacity, which because we knew what to do through the pregnancy is what my daughter has, which is why she can do anything, is because she thinks with both sides of her brain at the same time. Now, I'm not saying the brain is the mind. It isn't. But it is the gateway to the mind. it is a thing that if we can encourage the brain to follow the light and sound frequencies that come into it, then we can go into the characters within and ask them why they are doing what they are doing. And they will tell you. Now, Charles Tebbets used to sit there and say, this character comes out, you come to me because you can't fly in an aeroplane. That's right. Well, I want that character to come out and tell me. Now, I don't know how this character is going to speak to me. I don't know if it's going to wave its fingers, wave its arms, or speak to me with its voice. But when that character that can't get on the aircraft is ready to come and speak to me, say the words, I am here. And after a few moments, there'd be a twitch, and then this person would say, I am here. And Charles would say, thank you very much for coming to talk to me. My name is Charles. Now, you don't know anything about me, and I don't know much about you, but you can't get on planes. And they would say, no, I can't get on planes. And then he would go and say, well, what shall I call you? And it would come out with a name, and name itself. And then he would go into a full-blown conversation with the character. The character would give it its reasons. Then he would ask another character within you, the human, to say, why can you get on a plane? Why do you want to? And it would go into a two-way conversation. These two-way conversations could last an hour, 2 hours sometimes, but the end result would be a truce. And when the truce was there, they would come out of their state, and this could be in a class of 20 people watching, they would come out and say, is that the case? I'd watched a film, I'd had headphones on, or something of this nature, and he would have the warring fractions within the human settle their differences, and the person would go out and live their life. Brenda, wow. I have done that myself. That is what I have done for me, to go from warring fractions within me to not having any warring fractions within me, and so that I can make a decision and do it, rather than have part of me wanting to do something and part of me not. And these are the sayings that people use every day. They'll say, I'm in two minds about this. I don't know whether to do the washing or go to the movies. Well, every hour and a half, one side of your brain becomes dominant over the other. Oh. Every hour and a half, you will breathe through one nostril. And the nostril that you are breathing through, it becomes clear, stimulates the brain on the opposite side of your head. Oh. Every 90 minutes or so, this changes. I go through a little experiment with people and we do this. And then when that side of the brain is dominant, the ideas encapsulated in that brain and in its set of frequencies will become dominant. So here once you get the understanding that you're two people with two brains, with two ideas going off at the same time, once that concept gets in to the people who come to my classes, then they walk away saying, well, it's my other me. Other people, you know, people were writing songs 100 years ago. I know for those who've listened to the Eagles, who know one of their songs, Peaceful Easy Feeling, which says it all, Peaceful Easy Feeling. I have a voice whispering in my other ear, is one of the lines from the song. Mississippi John Hurt in 1927 was recording C.C. Rider. If I had listened to my other mind. We talk about your heart feeling and your gut feeling, or your brain, your head feeling. Well, I was thinking with my head I'd do this, but my gut said I would do that. Right. When in actual fact, of course, the solar plexus, the word solar and plexus, being the sun of the body, is the ganglionic mass. And when certain frequencies are used, which are well known, when certain frequencies are used, and the actual living character of Brenda or David steps to one side and we start speaking to other forms of intelligence, people say to me, as I've done it myself, the voice doesn't come from your throat, it comes from deep in your chest. We could talk on, I could talk on like this forever, but your listeners must understand now whole brain capacity and how that comes about. And I want them to take away certain things of cause and effect. What the cast iron law of the universe is cause and effect. Everything has a cause. And so when you're using meditative techniques for yourself, or if you're writing a script for yourself, there are things that you need to understand. If you say to yourself, I'm going to let my scalp relax and then let this relaxation go all the way down through my neck and through my body to my feet, you might just as well have hit yourself on the head with a book. It's got no effect on you. If you're going to say, I'm going to let my face release all the stress that's within it, that will cause my head, my neck to feel more comfortable, more calm, more tranquil, more quiet. And as my head is more calm and more comfortable, because I know what it's like to be comfortable, as my head and my neck become more comfortable, that causes my back and my arms to become more comfortable. This idea that, and I've heard it on relaxation tapes all over the place, people, I'm not going to be scornful, the first psalm, which we ought to repeat here, don't sit with the scornful. I'm not going to be scornful of those people who do it because they're doing the best. But I want your listeners to understand cause and effect. As I cause the stress, if you want to use that word, as I cause the tension, the ill feeling or whatever it is in me to go away, that causes something else to happen. That's clear enough, isn't it, Brenda?
Yeah.
If you do this, it causes that. If you hit me on the head with a cricket bat, it's going to cause me to get angry and I'm going to hit you back. If you put your foot on the brake pedal, it's going to cause the car to come to a stop.
Right?
Well, in the same way, if you sit down, that's going to cause you to take the weight off your feet. And as you sit back and you put your arms on the arms of the chair, that's going to cause your arms to feel more comfortable. That in turn will make your whole body cause itself to become more comfortable. And this is called fractional relaxation. And as you cause something else to happen in your body, it causes the whole of you to become calm, tranquil, and quiet. And as you take yourself into this altered state of being alive, you will automatically calm yourself down and ask yourself questions. But when this voice comes in your head, and we've all got that voice, make no mistake, that voice is the other you. This is what makes a mockery of the term schizophrenia. This was a Greek term meaning broken spirit. Schizophrenia, broken, two characters. We are all two characters. You've just got to get the two of you working together instead of fighting each other, which they do, because one will want to do something and the other one won't. When people come to me, and they have done now so many times, it's always because they're doing something they don't want to do or they can't stop doing something that they're doing. So when somebody says, I had a case quite recently of an obese person came to me, and I said, well, what do you have for your breakfast? Oh, it was the father who sent it. It's not the story, but anyway, you must never, in hypnotherapy, try to work with somebody who hasn't brought themselves to you and asked you to help. If someone says, look, will you come and see to my 16-year-old daughter? She now weighs 400 pounds, and we've got to do something about it, which is the case I was telling you. So I go along, and I talk to the daughter, and I go to the house, and she won't come out, of course, because she doesn't want to. She can't get clothes to fit. She can hardly walk. And I say, what do you have for your breakfast? She said, egg sandwiches. I said, egg sandwiches? Yes. I said, well, sandwiches? How many do you have? Oh, I always have six. And Oh, exactly. And so, but she was not in the slightest bit interested in not having six egg sandwiches for breakfast. She loved having those egg sandwiches. And her father wanted her to stop having the egg sandwiches, but she didn't. Now, taking that case on, because until the person themselves said, I need help with this, I want to do something and I can't, or I am doing something that I don't want to do, I need your help. And so my answer today is, rather than ask people to meditate and sit and relax and take an hour going through hypnotic techniques, I've included Charles Tebbit's work in the book so people can learn the sway test, the handshake test. They can learn all that. personally, if I'm out and I've got my iPad or whatever, my iPod, I can use binaural beats in sound only. If for a few hundred dollars, I can buy a light and sound machine and I can trance myself out and feel as I feel at my age and live. Because I, Linda, I'm sorry, Brenda, I was thinking about my wife's friend, Linda. my she's the same age as me. She's 68. Oh, my Avast been updated. Because she is the same age as me and looks 30 years younger. And if you can feel as I feel about life, I have a 16-year-old daughter, so I have to live like a 35, 40-year-old man all the time. I've got no option. I've got to live like that. And so I have to have all my parts working together. So in my own world, I've decided that we're two people and that I like my other me. And because I like my other me, we can work together, we talk together, and we come to a conclusion we're going to do something, and we do it. And I can work, I can go to bed at night, and I can sleep. And sleep, of course, is a great healer. I hope I've talked long enough. I hope I've made sense. Because
you have.
You know, people must get over this idea of where the doctors have tried to become priests by issuing pills. Make no mistake, some pills save life. But a lot of people will go along to a doctor, they'll get some prescription, and then they've got twice as much work to do because they've got to get over the tablets that they've been given, which cause iatrogenic disorders, they cause illness. They've not only got to get over their illness, they've got to get over the illness that the chemicals have caused. And so if you can use meditation, if you can learn about light and sound technology, if you can learn that the sun and the earth resonate at 7.83 cycles per second, called the Schumann resonance, and if you can get into that and vibrate, and this is something else I hear, which is complete garbage. When people talk about, oh, I'm at a higher vibration, I can tell you, after 50 years practice and living the life I live and turning people's round life, I've turned people's lives around for years and years and years, at great expense to me and them sometimes. Vibration speed, high vibration, is nonsense. The vibrations that work, believe me, are at a certain set of frequencies, and they're not the high ones. When people come along, we strap them to an EEG, measure them. You can actually buy EEG machines now that you can strap to your wrist, and you can go out and rugging and running, and you can test your frequencies. And we had a lady here quite recently, as psychotic as they come. She was all dressed in white, and she said, I'm vibrating at such a high frequency, I'm vibrating higher than Jesus. I said, okay, right, so there's a case to deal with. The speed of the vibration that you want to resonate at, you can find yourself which suits you, because can you believe they're all different? People do resonate at different frequencies, males different to females, and that we've got one that is more suitable for us than others. And I can tell you that scientific investigations and people I've dealt with, some people resonate very well at 14 cycles per second, some at 21, some as high as 23. I never yet met anybody vibrating with brain frequencies at 30s and 40% that weren't absolutely wound up and doing everything they could to try to slow down. So this idea about high frequencies,